We are in the middle of the page on Daf Yud Amud Aleph at the two dots. It's about 22 lines up from the bottom. The topic is Yom Genusia Shel Malcheim. The Mishnah on Ches told us that Yom Genusia was a Yom Eid. It's one of the holidays for the idolaters, for the Romans. And on that day, obviously, you can't do business with them. And then there was a discussion about 3 days before, 3 days afterwards. But right now, we want to focus on understanding what this Yom Genusia is. So says the Gemara, asks the Gemara, "My v'yom Genusia shel Malcheim? What is this Yom Genusia for kings?" Amar of Yehuda, "Yom shemamidin bo ovdei kochavim es malkam." It's the day that the idolaters inaugurate their king. V'hatanya Yom Genusia v'yom shemamidin bo es malkam. But we have a brisa which states that the day that they inaugurate the king is different from the Yom Genusia. So what is Yom Genusia then? Gemara says it's actually very similar. Lokasha hadidei hadibrei. Now the one is referring to the emperor being inaugurated, and one is his son's ascension to the throne. But that presupposes that the son takes over for his father. But the Gemara asks, Umi mukmi malka bar malka? But in the Roman society and the Roman government, does a son take over for his father? Fatani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef teaches from a pasuk in Ovadia, Hinei katan nisaticha bagoyim. I have made you, the Romans, the smallest of the nations, which we interpret as, or Rav Yosef interprets it as, to mean, She'ein moshivin melech ben melech, that they don't appoint a son of the king to become the next king. Bazui atam od, you are very inferior, you're denigrated. She'ein lam loksav v'lo lashon, they don't have their own language or handwriting. And we'll get to that in a moment to explain what that even means. But the point for now is that there can't be a holiday where they're appointing the son as king, where the son is ascending the throne's king, because they don't do that in the Roman government. Elamai, so therefore we need to know what is Yom Genusia then? We're stuck. Elamai Yom Genusia, so what is Yom Genusia? Says the Gemara, Yom Haleda. It's the birthday of the Roman king. That's what we're celebrating, or the Roman emperor. Which then begs the question, so clearly we know that Romans celebrate holidays. We also know that Paro's birthday was also celebrated. Yom Huledah says Paro. The question is, what about Jews? Or is it appropriate for Jews to celebrate holidays? And there's a nice little discussion about that, where many tzaddikim did make special su'udos on their birthdays. Clearly, the idea being is that as long as a birthday is for to give hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to give thanks for being alive, then it's something which is appropriate to do, because it's always appropriate to give hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, certainly on a birthday as well. Anyway, back to our Gemara. So Yom Genusia must mean a birthday. V'hatanya Yom Genusia v'yom Haleda. But we have a brisa which distinguishes between a birthday and Yom Genusia. Well, then what could it be? So the Gemara answers, no, lo kasha hadidei hadibrei. No, one is referring to the emperor's birthday, and one is referring to the son's birthday. V'atanya yom genusia shelo, yom genusia shel beno, v'yom haleda shelo, v'yom haleda shel beno. But we have a brisa which distinguishes one yom genusia from him and from the emperor and from his son, plus two yom haledas for shelo and shel beno. So clearly, yom genusia cannot be referring to a birthday, since we have a brisa which talks about birthday for the emperor and birthday for the son. So now we're stuck. What do we do now with Yom Genusia? What exactly is it referring to? Elamai Yom Genusia. So what is Yom Genusia? What we originally suggested. Yom Shemamidin Bo Malkam. It's the day where the king is inaugurated. V'lo Kasha Hadidei. And like we said before, one is referring to the day where the emperor is inaugurated, and one is when the son ascends to the emperor's throne. And then the Gemara asks, like we asked before, V'i kasha lach t'lo mukbi malka bar malka. But what about the fact that we don't appoint a son to ascend his father's throne? Ayidei she'ela mukmi. If the emperor makes a special request, we would do it. Kegon asviris bar Antoninus hamelech. like what happened to Asvirus, who was the son of Antoninus. Who is Antoninus exactly? The general understanding is that it was Marcus Aurelius, one of the Roman emperors. However, there is a dispute that there could be a number of others, because Antoninus was the general name used for seven Roman emperors, so it's hard to exactly determine, to pinpoint which emperor the Gemara is referring to. And now the Gemara is going to get into a long discussion about Antoninus and Antoninus's relationship with Rebbe. Now, before we continue, I wanted to get back for a moment to that statement made before, that she'ein lem lo ksav lo lashon, that the Romans don't have any language or handwriting. So Rashi says, on the fourth line up from the bottom, he says, ksav lashon sharomiim me'uma acheres ba'alehen. Their ksav and lashon came from another nation. Acherim tiknu lehem kol sifreim, and others kind of instituted all their books. They all came from, it was all borrowed. They don't have their own language. And that's what made them inferior to a certain degree. They weren't highbrow. They had to borrow. Tosos gives a slightly different approach. He says that, you know, that's not unique, the fact that they had to borrow their language. Because he says, well, the Tema, the Bnei Yishmael, Bnei Keturah, V'Amun Amov, She'amdu Achar Dor HaFlaga, Me'ayin Balahem Lashonam, Imlo Me'um Acheres, all of them who were part of the Dor HaFlaga, all of their languages were borrowed. Therefore, there's nothing unique. That Pasa can't be referring to something unique, since if that would be the case, according to Rashi. So therefore, Lachkach Perishri, Ksav Lashon, Chashuv. Now, it wasn't a chashuv language. It wasn't a refined language, dialect, like the Greek language. The Greek language was something which was more refined and dignified. Theirs, the Romans, was not considered up to the same quality as the Greek language. So just to recap before we begin the stories of Antoninus and Rebbe, was simply that Yom Genusya, the holiday, the aid we're referring to in the Mishnah, is referring to the inauguration of the king. Now we continue with the stories of Antoninus and Rebbe. Now before we begin, I'll just mention two things. First of all, Tosfos on Amud Beis, on Yid Amud Beis, tells us the Medrash, which is quoted in the Yerushalmi, this idea that when Rebbe was born, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi was born, there was a gzera not to against circumcision, but his parents were moser nefesh and gave him a bris. However, when someone informed on them, and when the Caesar found out that Rebbe had a mila, he wanted to take the baby away, but the mother, Rebbe's mother, somehow switched Rebbe with for another baby, and that baby happened to have been Antoninus, and she raised Antoninus for a number of years in her home, and ultimately she brought Antoninus to the Caesar. I guess it took a few years to go through the process, or maybe a few months, to bring the child to the Caesar after getting the summons. And when she brought the baby to the Caesar, the baby did not have a bris, and therefore she was exempt and everything was fine. And one of the officers said, I know for a fact, I saw that her child went through a circumcision. It must be that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does miracles for the Jewish people, and therefore, as a result, they nullified the decree and reinstituted or permitted bris mila once again. That is the story that the Gemara brings down, that Tosfos brings down, and we're also told in Tosfos, and we'll see it in the Gemara, that Antoninus also enjoyed learning Torah. All these stories are fascinating and interesting. There are many other stories in different Masechtos and Sanhedrin about the relationship between Antoninus and Rebbe. Did it actually happen? Hard to say. It's similar to whether Bar Kochva really had a relationship with Rabbi Akiva. Did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really have a relationship with Nero? We don't know, but presumably because the Prushim and those who were mentioned in the Gemara were such a small minority, the likelihood that they did have these relationships probably minimal, but nevertheless, the impact and the meaning of the stories are fulfilling and fascinating and interesting. So here we go. With that introduction, Amrle Antoninus le Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe, Ba'ina de yimloch asviros b'ri techosi. This is Abed Tiveria Kalania. Said Antoninus to Rebbe, there are two things that I want to do as emperor. Number one, I want my son Asvirus to ascend the throne after me. And number two, I also want to make sure that in Tiveria, which is an area where there are many of the Amoraim, many of the sages, I want Tiveria to be a place where it's tax-free. I don't want them to pay taxes. I want them to be exempt from taxes. They're studying Torah. That's all that matters to me. So leave the rabbis alone. I don't want them to pay taxes. However, vi'i emaluhu chada avdi, trelo avdi. However, I can only do one. I can't do both. So what's your advice? What should I do? Should I choose the tax or should I choose that my son should take over? So what happened? Aisi gavra Arkave Achavre Vyayavle Yona Liiloi Biade Vamrle Litata Emerle Ela Dilamifrach Minyade Yona. So Rebbe was speaking to Antoninus in code. I guess to preserve their relationship, Rebbe didn't want to be discovered. So what Rebbe did was he had one person stand on the shoulders of another. He gave the person on top a dove, and he told the person below to tell the person up top to set the dove free. And based on that act, Antoninus witnessed it. Amar shmami nahachi kamerli. He said, I know exactly what Rebbe's advice is, and it's wonderful. At boi minayu da asviros bri imlo tchosi. He suggests that I should have Asviros, that my only action should be to have Asviros ascend the throne after me. Ve'emile l'Asviros t'tavit t'veria kalania, and I'll tell Asviros that when you become king, make sure to exempt the rabbis in Tveria from paying the taxes. And therefore he was able to accomplish both the way that he wanted. That's story number one. Story number two, Amar Le, Antonina said to Rebbe, Mitzarin li chashuvei Romoi, some of the nobles in the Roman government are giving me a hard time, they're agitating me, and I don't know what to do. So what did Rebbe do? Ma'ayale legina. He brought Antoninus into his garden. Kol yoma akir le pugla mimishra kamei. Every day, I'm not sure for how many days, he would pull one radish out of his garden right in front of him, and he would leave it there. And from that, we see not only do you need to be a farmer, just kidding, but we also see Amar Antonina said, Shmamina hachika Amar li. This is clearly what Rebbe's suggestion is. How can I get these individuals from, you know, to stop badgering me? At ketol chad chad minayu, Velotis garabahu bekulu. Rebbe's suggestion is, kill them one by one. Take them off slowly. Don't kill them all at the same time. Don't ambush them. If you do one at a time, then it won't cause a great uproar. It's, you know, it happens almost naturally, and therefore, that's how you'll be successful. Which begs the question, yeah, Rebbe's giving advice to kill people? Lifnei Iver? You're not allowed to tell somebody to kill? I mean, how do you justify something like that? So perhaps he was the king. It's different. Tosfos on Omid Beis, which we'll spend a little time on during our digging deeper podcast for the week. Tosfos does mention this idea that because he was the king, if he would allow something to continue, it could endanger his life, and therefore it's almost a case of Hababa Machteres, Abalahashkecha Hargem Lahorgo, that in self-defense, he was killing them. Even though he was the one initiating it, it really was, to a certain degree, self-defense. So that's, the Gemara continues, from story number two. Well, actually, it's a question on story number one and two. On Amud Beis, Vilemele Meimar Behedya. Why was he not afraid? Why was he afraid to just tell him, just say in public, say, this is what I want you should do? Amar Shimi bi Chashuve Yumitzarile. Well, he was concerned that the Chashuvim of Rome would then start to badger Rebbe, because Rebbe is now getting involved in these politics, and it wouldn't be good for him. That's why he refused to say anything. He just kind of showed it. Then the Gemara asks, fine, so don't scream it out loud. Well, then at least do it quietly. Even that he refused to do, because the birds of the heavens will bring the voice, the noise across. Right? The walls have ears. Everyone can hear. Somehow, a little birdie is going to tell someone what happened, and it's going to get back to them that it was Rebbe, and then Rebbe would get in trouble. As a result, he felt the best way, the most effective way to communicate with Antoninus was to do it by giving him signs. He could have used Snapchat and things would have disappeared after 24 hours, but even that he wasn't willing to do. I kid. So just to recap, we have Yom Genusia. We ended up saying Yom Genusia is referring to the day that the king is inaugurated. That is the Yom Eid, and therefore 3 days before, 3 days afterwards, whichever opinion you follow, would also be prohibited to do business with an idolater. And then we began discussing the story of Antoninus and Rebbe. We discussed two of the stories, and again, what exactly the relationship was with Antoninus and Rebbe. Did they really know each other or not? For all intents and purposes, at least for the purposes of our Gemara, it's irrelevant. These stories are certainly fascinating, and we'll see a few more as we continue.